Craig Hughes, today the ECB had bad news for consumers on interest rates, but not as bad as it could have been.
No, the rates increased today by 0.25%. It's the seventh increase since last summer. There had been some suggestion that it could have been higher, that it could have been as high as 0.5%. But I guess the bad news on top of that slight bit of good news is that the head of the Christine Lagarde said that they're not done yet. We're on a journey and we haven't got there yet. So indicating that, you know, this sticky inflation, as economists call it, warrants for further actions. And I mean, if you look across other countries, the US, New Zealand, they've gone much higher. They're at 5.25% overall now. We're in the EU, we're at around 3.25%. So, you know, the medicine could have been tougher, but what I predict out of this will be is, you know, they're saying we need to try and curb inflation. I'd say that the prospect of an energy credit now in the next budget is going to have to be almost taken off the table, because we can't have any more inflationary measures going into the system.
The ECB has advised specifically against any subsidy or help, which is going to lead to the old tension between politicians and economists. It's all right for you guys. You don't have to run for election.
Yeah, now, and they'd previously said that, and it was kind of being a bit resistant by the government here. So it'll be interesting in the face of this most recent warning from the ECB if they heed that advice.
Right. And interest, has there been any political reaction today in particular to this, in terms of reiteration of calls on action on interest rates or tracker mortgages or the like?
Yes, so Sinn Féin have been leading the charge for the government to introduce mortgage interest relief. Their policy has been criticised a bit by the Taoiseach during leaders' questions today, who said that there was a lot of issues with their exact policy. And the Taoiseach kind of indicated that, you know, it could be on the table come budget time, but it would have to be a budgetary measure. And then I guess you have to look at how you make it as fair and equitable as possible to kind of everyone out there, not just particular groups.
Okay. Let's get an economist's view on this. We'll get the political view on it shortly with our panel, but we're going to go to University of Limerick Economics Professor Stephen Kinsella for a dig into the ECB's move. Stephen, good evening to you.
Good evening.
So to an Irish borrower who's looking at their borrowing costs go up on top of all their other bills, and in order to try and help them understand the logic of why they're dealing with this extra cost, what is the logic of hiking interest rates when bills are already high?
The basic logic is they want to signal that unless they see inflation coming down, they want to change people's expectations. And that's why they've said, we are not pausing. You know, Christine Lagarde was very clear. She said, we know we have more ground to cover. And what they mean by that is they're going to make the cost of credit more and more and more expensive until they see inflation going down. And they want to change everybody's minds there. And so yesterday or last week, you would have been able to get a mortgage from Bank of Ireland at 4%. And now it's going to be 4.25, maybe even 4.5 by the end of the summer. So they're very clear. They want to force the cost of borrowing up for homes, for businesses. Now, of course, that will reduce disposable income, which is both an economic problem and a political problem. But it also means on the other side, for savers, the savers will benefit, because, of course, the deposit rates will go up as well.
Right.
So,
but the assumption is...
It's one of those double-sided things.
Is the lever here to stop people borrowing to spend in the economy and reduce credit-fueled consumption? Or is it on the basis that the higher the deposit rate in banks, the more money will be sucked out of the economy by people who will be incentivized to save, or both?
It's both. It's both, and quite deliberately both. The ECB will be looking very carefully at the banks to make sure that, you know, the savers' deposits are actually recouped and remunerated, you know, for the first time really in a very long time. And that'll change lots of other things along the way. Like, you know, there used to be pretty much no other game in town other than investing in real estate, in order to get some kind of yield on your investment. And now, you know, that's not true anymore. So people will be making kind of portfolio decisions based on that as well.
All right.
And, you know, it's very important to understand this, that as we change as we move away from a zero interest rate environment, we're going back to a more normal environment. That has good and bad effects. But in the transition, the government is going to have to help particularly lower income households to make sure their disposable income isn't overly harmed by this change.
I'll come back to that in a minute, but just on the logic of raising the deposit rates to suck money out of the consumer economy, that's based on the assumption that banks will make deposit rates more attractive to people who have money on deposit. And that's not really happening here, is it?
Well, it's happening at a slower rate. You are starting to see deposit rates go up, but it's a bit like when you know the price of oil goes up in service stations. You know, it goes up immediately. It goes down a little bit more slowly than you might think, and I think it's the same thing. The banks will eventually have to pass both the deposit rate increases on and the lending rate increases on too.
Right.
So all of a sudden the very advantageous tracker mortgage that people might have had for maybe 10 or even 15 years will be far less advantageous than somebody on a fixed rate mortgage, for example. So again, you know, things are slightly normalizing after a period of extreme strangeness.
Is there an effort in this move to deal with the value of the currency as well? If more money is on deposit with the ECB, then the value of the euro goes up. So you know, relatively speaking, you don't have as big a disparity in values between currencies. You know, if the Fed is a higher rate than the ECB, effectively more people bank with the Fed, the value of the dollar goes up and the cost of dollar imports go up into other currency areas. Is there an element of that to this decision as well?
I think because the rate changes are so gradual, it's unlikely that while this will be an effect and the mechanism you specified is correct, it's unlikely that the effect will be so pronounced as to affect the movement of entire exchange rates. You'll always see after a rate change, while people are clearing out positions short and long on either side, their bets either come in or they don't, and that changes the exchange rate a little bit. But because it's so well flagged and because market rate participants, they expect these things a little bit, it's unlikely to change things overly unless we see very long range changes. So in other words, the Feds and the ECB say we're going to change this thing for the next 2 years unless we see the following things happening, and that's still not being guided. So while we will see some exchange rate effects, unless we see really big moves and unexpected moves, I don't think the currency issue is going to be that big of a deal. Historically, Ireland has done very well out of, you know, the quantitative easing regime where we had, you know, a really weak currency combined with zero interest rate loans on everything, combined with historically very low prices of oil for the last 5 years.
Right.
You know, so we were doing very well, and that, like, every single one of those has now reversed, unfortunately. And so we end up in this very strange situation where interest rates are renormalizing, inflation is high. It's not astronomically high, but it's quite high, if falling. But unemployment is extremely low. It's 3.9% today. So the government has never had more money in its coffers. So it's a very strange moment economically, and this is why, you know, economics is never boring,
right?
Because it's a very, very strange moment to be analysing what's going on.
Well, to come back to your earlier point,
there's a bit of firepower that the government can deploy.
And to come back to that and your point about consumers earlier on, are there tried and trusted support measures to help consumers, taxpayers, voters, citizens that don't have a massive inflationary effect that would run counter to what the ECB wants?
Yeah, I think the basic thing is expanding services that we know most households need. So, for example, trying to reduce the cost of energy, doing things like sponsoring infrastructure programs, insulation programs, making sure that things like childcare are more widely provided at a higher rate. What these things do in effect is increase household disposable income, because you're offsetting some of the stuff that the household would pay with some government spending, and you're having other nice effects as well. So the more childcare you provide, the more female labour market participation we tend to see, things like that. So really investing in infrastructure like childcare, like insulation, like making sure that energy bills are lower. What that means is disposable income income, which is being hit in one level by the cost of credit going up, actually gets increased because the government's spending on things that they know households need at the end of the day. And, you know, these aren't in general inflationary issues, especially if they're done in a kind of a focused and a telegraphed way.
Okay, one final question, because one of the things that's been talked about is if interest rates keep being hiked, you could be looking at a situation where there's a recession, which is a lose-lose for people in precarious employment, people on low pay with high bills, with their line of work now being put in danger.
So the last time we saw an unemployment rate this low, I think, was October 2008. So, you know, with or 2006, sorry. So we know that the unemployment doesn't stay this low for very long. If the ECB, if it looks like the ECB is going to tip the European economy into recession, that's exactly the moment that they'll pull back and they'll stop. And I think they have been very clear on this, that their dual mandate is to make sure that inflation goes at or near 2%, but they also have to have some regard to the growth rate of the European economy, because otherwise we won't be able to generate the surplus we need to do things like see a greener economy and do the kind of investments in insulation and green power generation that we know we'll need to see over the next 5 years.
All right. University of Limerick Economics Professor Stephen Kinsler, thanks again for joining us this evening. And back to our political panel, Michael Collins, to you first. Is there anything there in Stephen Kinsler's menu of measures you'd like to see the government pick when it comes to deploying some of the surplus firepower they have to help people?
Yes, I certainly would. First of all, this is a severe blow to people that have mortgages. There's quite a lot of people struggling at this present time, and this could take them over the edge in relation to, you know, the interest rates, and they might end up losing their homes. Your banks and vulture funds ready to move in pretty quickly on a lot of people that are struggling out there at the moment. I think that, you know, you have an interest rates rising, you have energy bills rising, you have the ordinary household who are paying for fuel, that's going up 20 cents for car drivers for the next, and motor drivers for the next 6 months, 20 cents. It's all rise. And a government kind of sitting idly by and letting this happen. And I think they can't sit on the fence much longer.
So what are you
going
for?
Look at mortgage interest relief. They certainly have to do that one, because the ordinary householder can't afford to pay. They want to pay, and they will pay if they can. But I met quite a lot of them that are struggling at this present time.
Mortgage interest relief for whom? For people on trackers, for people on variables, for people on fixed? Because people would look at the tracker, holders of tracker mortgages, they looked at them with envy a few years back, saying they did well while everybody else was doing badly, and might think now, well, welcome to our world as of 5 years ago.
Yeah, well, I'd say, and people that are on tracker mortgages were more in a more comfortable setting all along, but they haven't been in that setting recently. So, you know, the government has to look at giving them some relief. I think they've been very silent on this whole issue. I think they need to make a move that, you know, maybe gives people a little bit of courage. This is a very worrying night for many people.
I think the Taoiseach was saying during the week that would require an emergency budget. Is that what you'd favour in this situation?
Well, we've had emergency budgets before, and we've called on ourselves, the Rural Independent Group, last year to have an emergency budget. They certainly can, you know, raise the cost of the fuel bills for people. They don't seem to have an emergency budget for that. So there's certain things they can and certain moves they can make, and they have been doing that. They've been sitting on the fence, and the ordinary people on the ground have been suffering, and that can't continue.
All right, Malcolm Byrne, the government is sitting on the fence, says Michael Collins. You're from a government party. What do you want to say to that?
So this is having a real impact. And in fact, at our parliamentary party meeting, the Fianna Fáil parliamentary party meeting last night, we had a really long discussion and engagement with Finance Minister Michael McGrath around this. And Stephen Kinsella outlined quite well, you know, the reasons as to why the ECB is doing it. But the practical impact, as Craig would said, you know, after 7 rate increase rises for anyone who's on track or variables, what that translates to for an individual or a couple who has a mortgage, you could be talking about a couple of extra €100 per month being paid. And that then
last July till now, it's about €400 on somebody who was on about 200,000.
Yeah. And then over the course of a year, you're talking about, you know, several thousand. So obviously depending on the size and scale of the mortgage. So that is a real impact cost. So what is the government doing? Well, if you listen to what Stephen Kinsella said, as he said, the most effective things that government can do is to look at reducing particular costs. So there have been a very, there's been very significant investment in the area of childcare. Childcare is now cheaper and more available. There's still more to be done, but that has happened. In terms of on transport costs, public transport costs have been reduced by 20%. For young people, public transport costs have been halved. Our challenge is, yes, around the continued rise in the cost of living.
And but the message from the government is, wait till the budget.
Well, no, but part of it has got to be because one of the difficulties, you know, Michael and others in the opposition benches, you know, they'd be looking for an emergency budget every month. And you can't just have emergency budgets every month. Any of the decisions that have to be made, it has to look at both the short-term implications, but more particularly long-term. And the fact is, what is of benefit now is the fact that the government has an economic war chest because the economy is so strong, because economic policy allows us to have that money. We can invest in that infrastructure and also look at the reliefs that can be made available to people.
All right. Annie Hoy, how would you spend the war chest?
Well, I think I'll just say, like, if there is an emergency, that's the time you need to have an emergency budget. And I think people feel under an immense amount of pressure. I don't think people have felt under this pressure for quite some time. So certainly the people that we talked to, and we've been calling for an emergency budget for a couple of times.
Give us a couple of targeted measures that would help rather than contribute to inflation.
Well, I think we'd like to see, I agree with Professor Kinsler around childcare costs. We hear every day, and I was really struck when he mentioned around the impact that would have on women and women being able to participate in the workforce in a way that they want to. We all know, all the stats around women and childcare not being able to work the way they want to. We'd love to see a really meaningful and accessible retrofitting scheme, insulating people's homes. You know, it's still very expensive. I think we had a former TD talk about how they couldn't afford to insulate, to retrofit their own home. So if we have people, you know, that's not affordable and accessible for people.
Is the labour supply there to do the retrofitting? Because it's expensive, because it's now a seller's market. Everybody wants retrofitting, but there are few enough firms, or certainly an undersupply of people who can do it, and therefore they can name their price.
Would you believe we were only talking about apprentices last night in the Shannon, and calling for around, the government have really big targets for how many apprentices they need, but apprentices aren't being paid a minimum wage, never mind a living wage. And we have heard, certainly in the Labour Party, people who would love to take on apprentices to be able to enter into the construction industry, but they literally can't afford to do it because they've been paid €6 an hour.
On that, I'll come back to you, Michael Collins. On that, the issue of people, there are people in construction firms who would like to take on apprentices. The problem with apprentices is they can't get their college hours. They can't get their off-site hours. There's insufficient capacity. Third-level institutions have blamed COVID for this, but there were thousands on the waiting list before that.
Well, I mean, in terms of the number of higher and further education places, there have been never more available across all sectors.
But not for apprentices.
Actually, the number, and Annie is correct in terms of some of the issues that are there and some of the concerns that have been raised, but the number of places on apprenticeships has been ramping up significantly.
I know, but it's different to get a place on apprenticeship and to be assigned to an employer, but to get the classroom hours, to complete that apprenticeship, to be fully qualified is a different situation.
And it is a challenge. The key is once somebody qualifies, and I mean anyone who knows, if you qualify, particularly in some of the traditional trades, so as an electrician or as a retrofitter or whatever, the opportunities that are there are going to be huge.
But you can't without the classroom hours.
And I accept that. And that is one of the issues that we're trying to address. I do want to come back. And I mean, I think what, Annie does need to acknowledge, and I think she is the fact that the government has invested heavily in areas like childcare in terms of being able to reduce those very specific costs to individuals. And the best thing that we can do in the budget, this is what we just discussed, there are a number of things, but is, can we look at reducing costs for that squeezed middle group once again? Then also with regard to, we need to look at people being able to switch mortgages, more competition within the financial and insurance and banking sector, and we can certainly come on to those issues.
Michael Collins.
Just one area that we don't need an emergency budget for is the reduction of VAT on the fuel. Instead, the government have decided to put up, bring it back to the old rate it was. We also need to cancel out carbon tax at this present time.
Fuel costs have come down, haven't they?
They're going back up 18 cents in the next 6 months. But they're due to government taxes. And that's not good enough. And we, the Ardney mother and father that are listening to this radio show tonight,
but these,
who are
diesel,
struggling,
diesel's
can't
backed
afford,
in some situations
they can't
to,
afford it. They can't afford
it. 140 something the when carbon, it was up over €2.
Yeah, but they don't need a budget to bring down the fuel, and that's one way that will give a little bit of money and a bit of relief to everybody. Public transport is great if you have public transport in your community. In rural Ireland, we don't have that. A bus leaves my area tomorrow morning at 7 o'clock and won't come back until 5 o'clock tomorrow
evening. Well, is the answer not invest in greater public transport?
Unfortunately,
rather than
Minister Ryan
prices.
Is not investing in public transport. He has failed so far to do that. And I can only tell for what's on the ground. And that's quite visual for us. But fuel, unfortunately, we have to use our cars. And fuel is one way that he could help. The Minister could, Minister McGrath and others could make an announcement on lowering the VAT and fuel.
Craig
and,
Hughes, one of the issues there about the hiking interest rates not being passed on in the form of deposit rates to consumers. We've heard politicians of various stripes coming out saying the banks should pass them on. But banks are answerable to their shareholders. They're not going to pass them on in answer to political pleas, are they?
It doesn't seem so. It'll be interesting to see whether AIB, given that the state has a stake in it, will do so. It seems no matter how much political pressure has been put on, it hasn't worked on the banks. So it's difficult to see what other leverage or pressure the government could apply there.
Annie Hoey, what would you do to the banks to make them pass on the rates? Do you have any ideas on what make them shift and out of the goodness of their hearts and possibly in breach of the company fiduciary duties to their shareholders pass on those deposit rates?
I'm pretty certain anything I would suggest would not be in keeping with any sort of acceptable parliamentary. I mean, we don't own the banks, and we won't even get into the historical reasons why we do and don't own. We have shares in some, and you know, if you don't have stakes in something, it's very hard to tell them to do something when we've got all these regulations to stop us interfering with them. And yet we have banks doing this, what sometimes feels to the regular person kind of a runaway system, you know, right. There's little control over it. And that must be very, I wish I could tell you how I would do it.
Well, there are a number of things that can do, because one, we need to be able to ensure that people can switch more easily. And one of the issues there is around legal costs. I know my colleague, Senator Catherine Ardaugh, is pushing whereby we look at reducing and minimising the legal costs for switching. I think what also is essential, and one of the problems we have had...
just a matter of interest, who's going to have to take the hit on that? Because if you've signed a contract to enter into a mortgage and you have to engage a solicitor to make that switch,
but it's
the solicitors have to take the hit?
Yeah, but there are easier ways. Yes, the solicitors do need to take the hit. And we should be making it as easy as possible. And I know Michael McGrath has spoken with the Competition and Consumer Protection.
What solicitor would sign up to engage in a mortgage switch if you're telling them it's the cheapest job they have to do?
There are ways of doing it in terms of from being able to digitally transfer from one bank to another. In terms of other things that can be done, what we do need to look at, in my view, and express it, is to give the central bank a mandate for competition. The central bank here in Ireland does not have, and indeed Gabriel McClough, who is the governor of the central bank, has said it is not part of the statutory function of the central bank to promote competition. And so when we had a situation, say, where KBC Bank left the Irish market, we didn't.
But if banks are making record profits at the moment, the difference between their lending rates and their deposit rates are such that if now is not a time for other banks to enter the Irish market with money that's been made hand over fist from Irish consumers, what could be done to get them in other ways? More price gouging, is it?
Part of it is about the fact that there isn't sufficient competition there, and the central bank, which is the regulatory authority for the... But talk to some of the other banks who have tried to enter into Ireland and tried to get a licence that's here. And Revolut was the one example when they tried to come here, where they finally got it after a lengthy period. By that stage, they decided to move to Lithuania. We need a regulatory sandbox at central bank level, which will allow some of the new fintech companies to be able to explore options. And by the way, this is about new ideas.
What is a regulatory sandbox?
So a regulatory
sandbox.
Apart
from needing to keep the cat away from it.
Yeah, no. But this is actually important for fintech companies, for new companies that want to offer financial services and products, that they're not bound by the same rules that the pillar banks and the big players are. We've got to encourage innovation within the financial and banking services sector. Okay. And that means if we can get new companies, new products, either indigenous or international,
I need to go to some listener text here. One for you, Michael Collins. It's funny how, quote unquote, these rural TDs give out about government policy on the late debate. It has to be pointed out, you're a senator, Mark Byrne. That it's funny how these rural TDs give out about government policy on the late debate, yet continue to support them by voting for them in the Dáil, says Gerard.
Gerard probably helped check my Dáil record. I don't think I've voted for this government very often in the past since 2020. I think maybe once or twice, and that's on other issues. But on the main important issues, I'd be very much opposed to the government, and that's what I've been on
who,
the last.
Who will you
years.
Vote for to form the next government? Because it's you. You said the government was sitting on the fence, and it's
well, hopefully, you know, we're setting up a strong independent group, maybe party going forward. So maybe we'll be sitting around the table in the next government. So who'll be forming government with us is what I'd be asking you, maybe.
Right. Just on the banks, before we move on to other issues, Michael Collins, do you think there's anything meaningful the government can do to change the situation with regard to banking competition or deposit rates in the country? Or is it really just pleas that are falling on deaf ears?
I just think that, you know, I think for the ordinary household out there, the ordinary Joe Soaps and the ordinary people that go to work, get up early in the morning, go to work in the morning and work hard all day, and I find they have very little money to pay for their mortgages, they have very little money left at the end of the week, they're trying to raise a family, maybe elderly people or whatever. I think they think this government kind of lies back when it comes to banks. You know, we're a major shareholder in the EIB. We should be, you know, in there, in around the table, discussing what can they do for their customers too, because they're making mass profits. I never have a problem with anyone making profits, but certainly that should be distributed back out.
But
to
their
people.
Obligations are to the shareholders. It's like if there comes a time that EIB, with its current profits, boosts its share value, and the government sells off its stake, it can then invest that money to help consumers, perhaps. But under company law, there's not a lot that the board members can do when their primary obligation is to deliver for their shareholders.
Well, I'm strongly convinced that if a minister wants to engage with a bank and strongly engage with a bank to create change and to create supports for their customers, the banks will sit up and listen.
Right.
The banks had to ask the government to sit up and listen a number of years back when they were on the verge of collapse. Now it's time for the banks to stand up with the people. And that hasn't happened. And it hasn't happened in relation to vulture funds, in relation to people, you know, and this is going to land more and more people into the same situation, losing their homes, more homelessness again in the long term.